So I'm thinking where we're at here is we're not running out of time. We may be running out of energy after doing our Zoom since 8 o'clock this morning. And so I'm open to further comments on this particular topic and to suggestions from Robin. I also would love to just after that, this we're getting to that point in the day where we discuss or have an opportunity to discuss what all's happened in the whole day and how that's gone. And so we also had other testimony this morning, and we had other subjects that we dealt with, and we had testimony around from the Beyond Toxics people making a specific request. So I again kind of like to complete the conversation on our climate change and carbon plan, and then see if anybody's got any comments on anything else that's gone on today. Robin?
Yeah, I guess I would just suggest that we can make some space at the board retreat to drop back into this discussion of how this climate, the CCCP, actually informs a lens or whatever it does to kind of inform the work ahead of you. I guess I would also ask Danny if there's, you know, do you feel like you have enough to go on to kind of make the updates based on input today? Or from board members, is there anything still burning for you that you'd really like to see out of this plan that you haven't already suggested that Danny can take into consideration as he's doing updates? And then thirdly, just to confirm that there is an opportunity for the board members to do a last pass at the document. Is that right, Danny, to kind of offer some of those strength and clarity components, things that will help just improve the overall sort of communication of the plan, not necessarily major substantive changes, but ways to make it, user-friendly and clear? So that piece can happen, I think, off, you know, after today and as we get closer to November. But are there any kind of big kind of policy frame issues that you see that you'd really like to see addressed in this that you haven't already shared with Danny at this point?
Sure. Kelly or Robin, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, one area that I didn't share earlier, but I think is really important. And Econ Northwest has done a lot of work on our rural economies and the health of our rural economies the last 40 years. And I think they've got a really good picture. And I think it would be valuable for this board I think it's really important as we look at this to understand the fragility of some of these rural economies. And as we think about the economic impacts, you know, going forward, who will this impact and how will that impact be felt? And I think Econ Northwest could really help us see that very quickly and clearly. They've done that work. They know where the hot spots are, and I think it would be a valuable resource to us.
Robin, could I mention one more thing?
Yeah.
Actually, I guess it's more of a reiteration. I'm just because I'm not terribly clear on the implementation side. I understand that we will be implementing some of these goals that are still pretty vague in this document through some of our processes into the future. And I just don't know that that's going to be satisfactory to the majority of our stakeholders. And frankly, not to me, not to have a more gelled conversation about specifically what we are trying to do, what the tools are available to us to do it, and which one of those makes the most sense to try to get off the ground in the shortest period of time. You know, what are our short-term actions that we're going to do? What are the mechanisms and how will we do them? And then, you know, I heard a lot of folks mention voluntary measures, incentives, things like that for some of these measures. And, you know, what are those? What exists out there to prompt folks to engage with some of these measures or to be more comfortable? And what's the process for us scoping those out? So, and maybe this is a conversation for October, But I'm interested in drilling down to the next step a little bit more and having an understanding of timelines, mechanisms, tools, all that kind of stuff.
Great.
Sandra, I do think, you know, and some of that can be in October. And I think, you know, the more we can give clear indications to the department, but the better. But, you know, a lot of it really will turn out to be once we've adopted this specific, ideas being put forward to in the work plans from the departments, you know, specific to incentives, specific to God knows what, that we will, you know, need to approve and get input again from our stakeholders on and all of that. I do think it's important that we get this thing adopted this year because we're right into the process of work plans and also where we are going to support the department going to the legislature because, of course, you know, not controlling the purse strings, policy option, anyhow, we're definitely going to be in that process right after the first of the year. So we want to certainly give as much direction as we can, but I don't think we can have a tremendous amount of specificity that we will be able to offer to them.
Yeah, no, I should clarify. I fully support this plan moving forward and us getting to the next step. It's more about the being clear about that next step. And I think it's harder for folks to see the bigger picture when we're doing things more ad hoc and we're coming back through. And I think it should all be integrated, right? These should be principles that are embedded in everything the department's doing. But kind of that roll up of what we're trying to achieve at a more global scale and seeing how the different things are fitting together is an important piece, and how we're planning to do that is something I want to talk about.
Yeah. Brenda.
Thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. Just reflecting back on this morning's session regarding fire risk mapping, and the work that Mindy Crandall and others are doing looking at the risks to underserved communities. You know, Carla's comment just made me think, I wonder if there's a way of incorporating that kind of an approach that Mindy's taking, looking at fire risk to underserved communities, to also looking at opportunities for carbon sequestration or carbon costs associated with fire reduction in those areas, so that we're taking care of the most vulnerable communities in a responsible way.
Chair Kelly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just add on to that. Thank you, Brenda, for that comment. I worked with the San Francisco and Minneapolis Fed economists to look at the multiplier effect of the real cost of these fires. And, you know, these fires are remarkably regressive to rural communities. And, you know, you look at social injustice and, you know, here it is, but they put a multiplier effect of 11 to 50 times depending on, you know, the closer to the urban centers, but 11 to 50 times the cost of firefighting is the real cost of these fires. And so at 117 million, you know, we're so far this year, we're up over $1 billion in terms of the total cost when you look at the total economic, you know, damage. And again, this is really hitting our rural economies at, you know, a significant rate. So I really appreciate your comment there. And there's a lot to learn here about the economic impact of what's happening.
You know, following up on both what Brenda's saying and what you are saying, Carla, I've been saying, and this kind of goes back to the longer rotations conversation, And if we were to, you know, be instituting any kind of regulations that were affecting rotations, that's an example of something that they would have potentially have a negative economic impact to these rural communities. And so it's my feeling, and this is just also kind of a moral judgment as well as a political judgment, that if you were to try to do any of those kinds of things that would have a positive impact in terms of carbon, you really need to couple them with programs that would benefit these communities and provide jobs. And there's, you know, obvious opportunities there where we need to fire harden these communities and mitigate the fire risk around many of these communities. So I see a lot of opportunity there, especially as we see a lot more federal dollars coming in there to try to actually do things that will have a positive carbon impact, and at the same time coupling those with what will actually programs that will actually create jobs. Okay, any other comments on the day? I brought up the issue that we were challenged by Beyond Toxics I think they specifically made a request that we do a 2-year moratorium, if I heard it correctly, on aerial spraying of pesticides. I don't know what other reactions are to that. I was struck by the fact that you know, any actions that we take, we have to be have the science to defend those actions, and it appeared to me that we would, from my knowledge of things, we would struggle to be able to justify that kind of action out of the box today. Any other thoughts on that?
The way I heard that was, I think the ask was specific to state forests. Am I correct?
I'm not sure. Does anybody?
I think that was the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I heard too.
Okay. Any thoughts about that?
Well, just a thought, and having done a little bit of work with herbicides many years ago, you know, I think it's a social issue. You know, if you want to look at the science, Jim, I think we need to look at the social science. Because there certainly is evidence that some types of chemicals can have adverse effects on some types of organisms beyond plants, and there is risk, although I think most of the science would indicate that in most instances with infrequent use of herbicides, the risk is pretty low. And with the recent work being done by the industry and environmental group working together to increase buffers and that sort of thing, you know, I think that's going to help reduce the risk. But that doesn't change the perception that there's a risk. And so I think it comes back to the social scientists. And I come back to Mindy Crandall and other social scientists at OSU. And, you know, what are they finding? Are the people who reside in these places and being faced with drinking water that could be contaminated even at very, very low levels, what are their perceptions, and how do we address that? Because it's to them, this is a real risk. I think we do have an obligation to address it.
Well, this is, you know, I think you're absolutely right, and it is the same way I view it. The problem here is, I don't think this issue is going to go away, because the whole perception of spraying chemicals on land where the water directly comes, the drinking water directly comes from, just as people have a pretty primal reaction to that. And yet, so that's where I think it needs kind of some creative thinking, because with the issue not going away, but the science, as I understand it, really not supporting a decision to ban that kind of spraying, how do we, how do we navigate towards a better solution for everybody involved? I mean, it is fascinating to think about. I mean, as we're saying, these lands get sprayed 2 or 3 times in a 40-year cycle, where many agricultural lands are sprayed repeatedly through a single season. But the big difference is people are not taking their water directly off those lands, even though the impact may be much more significant for a lot of communities. I think there is the side of this, which is the turbidity issue, which is probably a bigger or an issue more easy for us to deal with, because that certainly clearly is causing a lot of pain for a lot of these small, particularly coastal communities.
Just to put a finer point on it, Jim, Ben mentioned that I think they were referring to state forests, not private forests. But the other distinction that they drew was aerial spraying versus ground-based spraying, which can be much more targeted, and in their mind, I think, would reduce the risks. So I think there's some other things to think about here going forward.
Okay.
Yeah, if I may, I agree with that. I think it's worthy of additional conversation, and would be interested in seeing more of the information behind it, I think, or behind the request, which I think they said that they would be submitting. And I did hear them say that there has been additional restrictions on some of these particular compounds in different states, and I'm interested in the information behind that and why they're taking those actions in other states. And I think that could be relevant here also. And I'm also interested in how the issue is being addressed generally in some of the processes at play that we're currently engaging in. Because I think part of it is feeling like there's a perception that there's, we know, right? We know forest management can affect water quality. It can affect water quantity beyond the pesticide issue. So are we taking that seriously, and are we thinking about this and everything that we do? And so this is why I do think it's something that we need to talk about in October, and how we're being intentional about this topic.
Yeah, I would say one thing that perked my ears was their discussion or their statement that some of these chemical mixtures include odor masking chemicals. And if that's in fact true, to my mind, that odor masking chemicals have no business on our state lands, and that would certainly seem like something that we could easily fix. Comment?
One of the things I'm interested in here is, we keep hearing from the industry and also, from state lands, the discussion of using these chemicals year 1, 2, and 3, and then for the next 45 to, 55 years, they are not using them. And so, the alternative of trying to get those trees up and growing, that's not clear to me what the alternatives are. But I would like to, we've got all the spray records for state, and we've got all those, we've got all the immediate reporting. And I'd like to see the results of the actual testing. I mean, we test our water all the time. I'd like to, and some of the early testing, that we have seen proved pretty clean. And so I'd like more information from, really, really understanding the test results that we're getting. My other comment is, I wonder if we have given 762 enough time before we start looking at additional measures. There's a lot of changes in 762 that haven't really, played out yet. And I think we don't want to over.
Okay. Any other end of the long day comments, thoughts?
Chair, Chair Kelly, it appears State Forester Hirsch has her hand up.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to appreciate the conversation here, and I do. You know, I think that State Force leadership with Liz Dent and others would probably, and I think I would as well, appreciate the opportunity to come back and visit with you in regards to, you know, the stray concerns that were raised this morning. And I'd just probably like to leave it at that. But I know that we'll be having a debrief here real soon with the executive team, and we would appreciate having the opportunity to follow up on that topic.
We would love to have you follow up on that topic, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, Jim, this is Joe. I would hope that board members, if you get a chance to go out and actually see the protection measures that Liz's team, I mean, I've done a lot of herbicide spraying myself personally as a forester, and know I'm very acutely aware of the protection measures that are required associated with applying herbicides to label and to all the laws that regulate the use of those products. So I would encourage board members, if we can ever get to a chance where you can go out and tour state forests or a private timberland and talk to them about what they're doing, I think that'd be very, very informative to really understand what the rules, what the laws are. I think that's another piece that I think is very important for an understanding of what's truly happening on the landscape.
Great. So would any of our other department executives want to weigh in on this or anything else before we wrap up?
Yeah, sure. This is Liz, for the record, Liz Dent, State Forest Division Chief. So particularly as long as we're on this conversation, just echo what Nancy said, happy to come back and visit with the board on the topic. It'll be really helpful to frame up the type of information that the board would like to have that conversation. And then we can sort of figure out timelines and how we make that happen. A couple thoughts. I do want to 100% agree, Brenda, with what you said. This is a social dynamic. It's a social conversation. I've done herbicide monitoring in the past, familiar with some of those data and what that looks like. We recognize that as a division, and so we have been moving more and more to hand spraying, and you actually saw some of those data presented today in Beyond Toxics presentation. That comes with trade-offs, for sure. The workers being out there doing the hand spraying and making sure that they are safe is critically important. We also have a lot of measures in place to protect the public. We'll block roads, for example, put up, do everything we can to keep the public away from areas so that they're not exposed unintentionally. And we are continuously looking at new techniques, and new herbicides are coming online all the time that are safer. For example, we see a really important use being with invasive species as well. So I think what I would want to offer is the importance of having a suite of tools and finding having some sideboards that are really transparent for the public in terms of what we're using, which tools we're using, and when, and for what reasons. So I just wanted to put those ideas on the table for y'all to chew on. And then I guess there's the herbicide topic. Pause for a minute, and then I'll offer one more thought. If that makes sense. So just overarchingly, reflecting on the day and picking up on a thread there that Nancy offered, is really seeing this climate change and carbon sequestration as a unifying topic for the agency as a whole. And we're in a really important moment in time, and really have the privilege as leaders in forestry in Oregon and working with you as the governing body to really make a difference. And I so just wanted to make sure that you know we're all working together and are excited and committed to the process.
Thank you, Liz. Josh, you've got your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Kelly. Just wanted to follow up on the comment. There was a reference to the Senate bill. I believe the intention was Senate Bill 1602. That did increase aerial pesticide buffers this year along type F streams and other buffers as well. Also on December 15th, the actual ferns functionality, the e-notification system will go live, which will add 300-foot buffers to any identified points of diversion for domestic use water intakes. So just as part of this conversation, that piece of regulation will go into effect December 15th and has not yet, but just for awareness. So thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Anyone? In that case, we are about 10 minutes ahead of schedule, and I just got to thank board members, especially, I mean, doing this long a day on Zoom. Oh, my God, this is why we get paid big bucks, right, as we love to say. Thank you all, and with that, this meeting is adjourned.